Welcome back, Andrew. Andrew, it is so cool to be back together with you. I think we did a good job on the last one, so people are excited to talk to us again. I know you're the service director at Contino, and I'm excited about it. I won't go through all the stuff that we talked about last time, but I mean, you have cross-functional background, and it's just so impressive. I mean, the risk, the operations, compliance, strategy, everything we talked about last time. I'm just really excited about part two of our session today. We're going to dig into a couple more questions that probably a little bit edgier than last time, but I think it's going to be fun for you and me. So you got anything to say before we kick it off, Andrew?
No, thanks for having me for the second time. Looks like the first time was a good one, so we're having this second time.
So let's follow up again. Let's talk. So for years, CX leaders selected delivery locations primarily based on cost per seat, right? And remember, I am a BPO and we're global. You know, that playbook, it's evolving now. I'm seeing it. So like, what's broken in your opinion about how organizations still make location in 2026? What are leaders, what should they be looking for instead of just location?
That's an interesting question. I don't think anything is broken as such, but I think you're absolutely right in saying that location playbook has historically been focused on primarily one goal, is finding the lower cost per seat. And I guess these days, back in the day, success meant that when you identify the geography with high English proficiency and low hourly rate, that's a success. So I guess what is happening these days is that playbook seems to be evolving because AI is capable of handling high volume routine tasks. And so the work that humans do is more complex and it has higher stakes, and it is more, and I guess it ties in with what we were talking on the previous podcast, is that the work is more tied to trust. So I guess at this point, the question is not so much about what is the cost per seat, but more so, can the local workforce effectively work or augment AI, right? So location was good access to talent pool with English, but poor, I guess, digital fluency doesn't seem to be a good fit anymore. Because you have to have agents working simultaneously with like three or four AI-based tool sets.
Yep.
So you have to have someone like with not just the English, but also being able to critically assess and work with those AI tools. Basically, this is what that's what the digital fluency means.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. And you know, the one thing I would say is, you know, I still think there's organizations out there that are still anchored to this cost per seat. I don't think they're making a bad decision to what you say, like on purpose. But if you were to give somebody advice, think about somebody who's listening to us executive level. A lot of these scoring mechanisms, as you know, you've been in the business as long as me, I think they're still using forms from like 10 years ago that might not have all that AI stuff in there. Like what they should be looking for, it could still be the old blueprint, which is what we've done 10 years ago. Like what type of advice can you give people like that? Like how do you change that mindset? Does that help?
Yeah. So, I'm not sure if they're still using the same blueprint, but I guess the mindset is kind of still the same, because in the old model, locations were selected to handle massive volumes of tasks like calls or content review or tickets or whatever. And so based on the data that I've seen, AI agents can now, like, they're capable. I'm not sure if they're doing it in reality or not, but they're capable of doing like 80%, up to 80% of routine queries. Now, the trend seems that companies are moving away from this like classical labor arbitrage, if you will, to more like a value arbitrage, right? Meaning instead of 100 agents or 1,000 agents somewhere at a low cost location, you probably would have 100 agents, but which are like you can call it super agents, if you will, in any near shore location like hub like Romania or Poland or even Ukraine. So yes, you pay more per seat, but the number of agents is smaller.
Correct.
And resolution to cost ratio is higher and better because those agents are solving problems faster and more efficient. So you don't have to go back. So it's no longer, the goal is no longer to find the cheapest price per seat or price per human. It's more about how effectively that person can collaborate or work with AI.
Absolutely. And you nailed it. I mean, it's really the value. What value are you bringing me? And I think some people, you know, might miss that. All right, let's go to number two. So in this geopolitical disruption, like infrastructure risk, I mean, we see the news, anybody can turn it on, you know, this talent concentration, what people are talking about. People are worried about redundancy. They're worried about single location dependencies, which we agree. So how should a CX leader think about building a resilient delivery footprint, in your opinion?
So that's another one. That's not a good one. So resilient delivery footprint is not so much about the getting the cost as low as possible. Right. And I guess, again, this ties in with what we talked about on our previous podcast, is that trust and safety, it is no longer viewed as a purely as a cost center. It's more like a competitive advantage. And if you think about it from this perspective, it means that resilient delivery footprint would typically be consisting of three elements. First element would be onshore. That would be a core team that will manage key policy things or some key operational aspects, maybe some AI guardrails. Like basically will be establishing the rules of the game. The second element would be your nearshore team, typically Poland or Romania or even Ukraine, which are where talent is culturally sensitive, and it provides these high quality operations which you would probably need for like a high profile, high tier partners or high profile content. And then you would have offshore, which would be for high volume, like for moderation, data labeling for AI systems, or 24/7 support. So that will be your third element for scaling. So the other element to that is, or dimension, I would say. So there are three elements, like onshore, nearshore, and offshore for scaling. But there's another dimension to this. Instead of just going for the capital cities, you can diversify your strategy and probably will include some student hubs, I guess, if you will, or some other large metropolitan areas which provide extensive talent pool. Those locations, they offer lower attrition and higher loyalty. And then resilience also means that you should have at least some part of your workforce working fully distributed or in hybrid work arrangement, meaning that if physical office for some reason becomes inaccessible, then your team can work remote. And the other way around, if people cannot work remote, they can work from office.
Yep. No, I think that's really good. I mean, you're really nailing it. I mean, the one thing I've seen in my career, and I agree with everything you're saying, you know, we're in tier two cities. We actually have a big student population. We actually offer tuition reimbursement at eTech for that reason. You get them for at least 4 years. I think, just my opinion as well, I think the reason a lot of people don't do this type of diversified, you know, multiple sites, hybrid models, I think they're actually looking at their budget versus the risk, right? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
People do. They'll look at a budget and say, well, this is going to be the cheaper solution. Let me go here. Not understanding if, God forbid, something happens, it takes out an entire site. You're just upset a million of your customers, for an example.
But, exactly. That's a single point of failure.
Exactly. And I think not everybody thinks like that. All right. Good. So we did talk about nearshore. And by the way, that's interesting because nearshore is really gaining a lot of momentum now, especially because it's close to our time zone, at least for us. And, you know, the cultural proximity is pretty good, you know, vacation places. You know, our center's in Jamaica, you know, the vacation world, Montego Bay. But is it automatically the right answer for every organization? You know, that's what I'd ask you. Like, can anybody go nearshore? Or do you think that there's some organizations that it may not be the best thing for them?
That's a good question. So nearshore, I guess, is a middle ground for many organizations. And they choose it when they want to optimize their high costs of onshore but they require more sensitive, like they require talent that is more sensitive to, or like culturally sensitive and more culturally aligned. And also, it might be because of the time sensitivity, compared to traditional offshore destinations like Philippines or India. So nearshore is often viewed as a good fit for workflows that require high accuracy, high complexity, or it's sensitive for whatever reason, like a help desk, I don't know, help desk for a complex software as a service product, or you're working with escalations, or you're working with high tier partners. Offshore would typically be a good fit for a high volume moderation, for example, of user generated content, or for data labeling, or when you are like getting your model ramped up. That's for scale. When you need the scale, that would be offshore. And so, because it's absolute lowest cost per hour and you work highly repetitive and your work is mostly script based, that's what offshore is working good for. But if you're looking for something more nuanced, then nearshore probably would be your best option.
Gotcha. So what intrigues me the most about you and what we talked about before. So I've been in a call center business for got 35, 36 years now. Until recently, actually, when I met you. I haven't heard about Ukraine as much, but like what I'm seeing today, Ukraine has become one of the most talked about emerging delivery hubs in Europe. Myself included, I'll be the first to raise my hand. Like a lot of CX leaders still hesitate considering, you and I talked about this. I'm going to come visit you, obviously, one of these days. But like, you know, when decision makers fundamentally misunderstand, you know, what do they misunderstand about Ukraine's delivery ecosystem? You know, what do you think?
Well, how much time do we have?
We don't have time to go through the entire political world of it, but I want to give you enough time.
Ukraine is, and so this is me speaking, I'm trying to be as objective as I can. Ukraine is the singular most prominent case study in resilience. And because the war, the full-scale war started in 2022, and everyone was thinking, oh, there will be 2-3 days and Ukraine will fall. Guess what? It's 2026. It's been 4 years. Ukraine is still standing, and not just standing. Ukraine is resilient. So like I said, this is the singular most prominent case of case study in resilience. And it's no longer just an emerging destination. It's a war-tested ecosystem that has basically transformed this like crisis management, like from the first days of war. At its best, there was crisis management and it became standard operating procedure. Ukraine and businesses are operating in Ukraine, and guess what? They're growing in Ukraine. And the reason why it's happening because it's their standard operating procedures. It's no longer a crisis management, and it's been tested for 4 years now. So, and here's what reality of Ukraine delivery ecosystem is today, and here's why what resilience reveals about its future. The first misconception is stability. A lot of people think that, and it's the biggest, in my opinion, this is the biggest misunderstanding, that decision makers often equate war zone with the total operational blackout. It's not true. First off, it's not the entire territory of Ukraine that is a war zone. Second, Ukraine has pioneered this autonomous business continuity. Like virtually every major delivery hub in Ukraine, like Lviv, Kyiv, Dnipro, they have moved to this triple redundant power and connectivity protocols. Like this includes industrial grade setups, start with a Starlink, fiber optic internet connection, autonomous power stations, even some even have localized like solar microgrids, basically having all of those triple redundant layers to make sure that it's a stable connection. And businesses, like I said, businesses are developing. It's not like everything is going down. The second misconception is talent quality. The biggest misunderstanding that I've seen is that Ukraine is a place for low cost and low quality talent. Not true. So the reality is, and again, it's none of us would wish this to happen here in US, but war forced business community to solve sometimes impossible things in real time, like on the fly. You have to figure out a lot of things. Like when this winter, Russia has been specifically targeting an energy producing facilities, you had to solve those impossible things, how to maintain your operations in real time. And this has created like those 4 years. And imagine 4 years of this. This has created the workforce, which has goal-oriented mindset. Basically, you don't know what will happen tomorrow, but you have a goal, you have to achieve it, you have to survive. And so the circumstances are forcing you to come up with a solution. So that's one of the things. The other thing is that the explosive growth of Ukraine's domestic defense tech sector, and I'm sure you have heard about it, especially these days when like whatever is happening in the Middle East, people from the Middle East actually reaching out to Ukraine, hey, can you share your expertise with us? So that's what testament to this explosive growth of the domestic defense tech, Ukraine's domestic defense tech sector, all of those AI-driven drones, secure communication, all of those things related to unmanned operations. So that has cross-pollinated into other sectors, technical tech sectors, including SAS, including trust and safety. The other thing is, the other misconception is high risk. Ukraine grows under pressure. I don't think anyone can deny that. Ukraine not just survived, it's growing. And its tech sector in particular, and in economy in general, they didn't just survive since Russia started full-scale invasion 2022. It has grown. The data that I've seen says the tech sector in Q1 2026 has paid 68% more taxes than it paid the entire previous year. And this is a sign of mature scaling industry, not just yep. the one that is surviving or struggling. It's developing. And so if you're thinking about conventional low risk categories, then probably Ukraine will look uncertain in that. But if you're optimizing for things like critical thinking, loyalty, reliability, that's where Ukraine is one of the most, in my opinion, most undervalued assets in the global delivery footprint.
Yeah, that's just so impressive. Like, I agree 100% on the resilience. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. What I didn't know, what you shared with me today, was that data you gave me, which I took some notes. I mean, it backs up that story. That is an incredible, incredible story. That's awesome. All right. In 2026, most of the leaders in the BPO space, not all, some, they still hire for empathy, adaptability, critical thinking, you know, not just language anymore. We've all been through all these things, right? So like when you think about the future, which I think you and I are both visionaries, you know, how do you think we should change, like, you know, CX leaders who are evaluating the destinations, the talent, you know, your opinion, what's the next best thing to really, I'll say, help us separate what the true customer experience is going to look like to what the old thing was?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So, that's what we started from, right? And so we're seeing that in 2026, the more and more tasks, they transition, routine tasks, I mean, transition to, and this became like very popular buzzword, like agentic AI, right? It's basically AI that can execute tasks, not just a chat that, or a tool that you can chat with. So it has raised the bar in a sense of what good agent looks like. And you have rightly pointed out that it's the adaptability and critical thinking are the prime quality differentiators. When you evaluate like emerging destinations, mm-hmm. and Ukraine is included, it requires, I guess, looking past the conventional metrics of seats or hourly rates. Again, I guess resilience in Ukraine, more since we started talking about that, has created a unique psychological profile, in the sense that when you evaluate talent, look for the ability to make a decision in an unpredictable environment or under time constraints. And so when you evaluate those emerging destinations, if you evaluate them based on cost exclusively, then you'll miss the point. The true next generation hubs are not where the labor is the cheapest. It's where the human in the loop can add the most value to the AI stack that you have.
100%. Love that distinction. I mean, that's, I love human in the loop. I mean, what you're talking about is next generation is what you need to get to. And I love that. The everybody working off the old metrics, just, it's not the same. And the market, I mean, today's markets, it's nothing we've ever experienced with all these things out there. So you do have to change.
Right. No, absolutely.
Good deal. Last question, you know, our closing question for today. You know, if a CX leader is listening to us today, and let's just say they're running most of their delivery from one location, which we talked about because it works. Remember, we talked about same old, same old. What's that or anything in your wealth of knowledge? Like, what's one mindset shift you would want the audience to leave with today or have a conversation with their leaders today? What would it be?
Yeah, you're right. So that's a lot of people, they operate under this assumption. Okay, it's working. Just don't touch it, right?
I think we've all worked for somebody who was like that.
Yeah. So I guess the smart move would be in circumstances like this, the smart move would be to have a combination of all three. You would have a core team for high stakes, for the strategy things. You would have that on shore. That would be your quality hub, if you will. Like that would be things working like on a strategic things that you, and that you need a quick connection with that team, like on this, in a split of a second, you can reach out to someone and same time zone and they will be available and you can talk to them and they have the same cultural. So that's the, I guess the first element. The second, if you would have, you need to have someone for complexity and nuances, and that would typically be your nearshore team focusing on escalations and help desk, some of those like very, very nuanced things. And then if you need scale, most mid to large operations will do just fine with the first and the second. They need the core team and then need their extension nearshore that is sensitive enough, that is responsive enough, that is culturally aligned enough. But if you need scale, like, or your operations are growing and you need to scale it because you're getting those high volumes of content, images, video, text, or you need a large data labeling for your AI tools or 24/7 support, that's where you will go to onshore. So same delivery location, like I think we started from the same delivery.
Yeah.
Like single delivery location is a single point of failure, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to end it when you think about it. I mean, it's really practical. And I think that's what our listeners want is practical. You mean you run a great scenario there, the way to really do it successfully. I think some leaders, again, just my opinion, I've been wrong once or twice now. I've been wrong before. Like, I mean, I think some of the leaders avoid the exercise that we're talking about because they already know what the answer is going to be and they don't want to change. But I really appreciate the perspective today. This conversation, again, is entertaining as the last one. I look forward to talking to you for more. If anybody wants to contact you, we'll put it below, but I'll give you the final words today. If they want to contact you, how do they get in touch with you, Andrew?
I think LinkedIn is the best way to reach out to me.
Perfect. And we'll put your LinkedIn in the bottom of this podcast as well as my own. Thank you, listeners. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining me again. You guys all have a great week. And until we see you next time on our podcast, have a great one, everyone.
Great. Thank you.